a coconut, he bought it for a dime. Sister had another one, she paid it for the lime. She put the lime in the coconut, she drank and bowled up. She put the lime in the coconut, she drank and bowled up.
Welcome back to the FDH Lounge, only on the Sports Talk Network. Rick Morris and Elaine Tanko. The FDH Lounge, the show where nothing is off topic. We'll explain the significance of the bumper there in a second. Great job with that, Elaine, setting that up there. But that music was probably the most lounge-friendly type tune that we could find from a very beloved artist for our next guest on the program here. But I've really been looking forward to doing this for a long time. Our senior producer, the FDH New York Bureau, Steve Servillo, had set this up some time ago to get this in the hopper, and we were able to do this tonight. Appreciate him hanging on through the commercial break at the top of the hour as well. Really appreciate that. Our next guest is somebody who has carved out a really excellent career for himself in almost 3 decades in the film business, branching out into doing voiceovers. And it's an interesting thing. There's a handful of roles that he is best known for. I have to say also, and then I'll kind of tease this, bringing him in here as well, the role that I know him for, for the most, the one that was always nearest and dearest to my heart, is probably not the one that most people bring up to him when they see him on the street. But that's the beauty of it with somebody of his experience. There's probably any number of roles aside from the one or two or three that come to mind for a lot of people that people will associate with him. He's had a great career, and it's wonderful to be able to have him on the show tonight and catch up with him. Actor Curtis Armstrong joining us on the program tonight. Curtis, welcome to the FDH Lounge, sir. How are you this evening?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Oh, fine, thank you.
That was a great intro. I'm sort of listening to it. The coconut there. that's a weird mix. As near as I can tell, that's not your common released mix of that song.
Well, that's very interesting.
I'm impressed.
I just learned something there from you, Curtis. I didn't know that because, honestly, when we were setting this up here for tonight, I just plucked that one off of YouTube. So you're telling me that that's not really the conventional mix of it then?
No, it's a live one, I think. It's really unusual to hear that. That's really cool.
Okay. Well, thank you for noting that. I just we wanted to have something special to welcome you in, and that was one of the things that we came across in the course of researching this here. Musician Harry Nilsson, that you're a huge fan of his, and somebody who, that must have been a great thrill for you to even be participating in the process of helping to arrange liner notes for an album. I mean, how many people get to do that for a musician that they really look up to? That had to be a tremendous thrill for you.
It was totally unexpected. They were looking to do the release of his whole catalog on CD, many of them for the first time, and they found out I was a fan and pretty knowledgeable, and I could put sentences together. So they asked me to co-produce the whole series, and it was wonderful. It was a great experience.
That's incredible. That's an experience I know that a lot of people would like to have to get to participate.
Oh, I mean, it was going every once in a while, going to New York and listening, going to the studio and listening to all the unreleased material and session tapes, and I mean, that's a dream, you know.
Oh yeah, to get let behind the curtain with somebody who's a personal favorite. I think a lot of people can relate to that. We all have our favorites. We all have people that we look up to, and that would be tremendous. I kind of teased it in the open here when I was talking about some of your more prominent roles. And, of course, you're probably used to the number one thing I'm sure that gets thrown at you over time as far as the roles played over the years, of course, Booger from Revenge of the Nerds. I got to say, you know, as my number one thing, frankly, with you, I was the biggest moonlighting mark back in the day. I mean, there are not even words to tell you.
Really?
So, I mean, the role I always think of is Herb Viola from that show. That's always the number one thing. I've seen you in any number of things also, Curtis, but for me, that's got to be right up there. I mean, that was network when there was only the three networks before cable was much of an impact in this year, too.
Right.
So is that kind of on the next tier of things where people associate you with it?
Not as much as you'd think, actually, because you know, it was a short run. There were only about 3.5 seasons of that show, and it was in the 80s, and they didn't release it on DVD until a few years ago. And by that time, I think a lot of people, unless they were like you and actually watched it at the time, a lot of people had pretty much forgotten that show. It seems to have sort of dropped through the cracks. So, in fact, although I do get it a lot, especially since they put them out on DVD, it's not really as commonly mentioned as you would think.
Interesting. Okay, I would have thought that. What are some of the other ones? And of course, again, you know, I'm sure the predominant one. I don't know what percent. If we were to do a pie chart here, you know, as far as people, you know, coming up to you and talking about a role, Booger's got to account for a large slice of that. But when you start looking at the next tier, if not Herbert Viola and number two, what are some of the other things as well here? Is it perhaps from the movie Ray? Is it some of the other more recent things here? What do you tend to get?
So there's the thing that I find out is that after having been in it, as you've said, for a long time, I have, you know, different generations relate to different things for different reasons. So I actually, you know, get a lot of very young kids now approaching me because I did one episode of iCarly, you know, in an afternoon. And, you know, I think it did more for my reputation in, you know, the tweens and unders that anything else I've ever done in my life has done. So there's that on the one hand. Revenge of the Nerds, obviously very big, and that sort of crosses all generations. And then I'd say probably the next one from after Revenge of the Nerds would be Better Off Dead, which is the movie that I did not exactly after Nerds, but... Mm-hmm. Close to the same time, the character I played in that, Charles DeMar, that's still enormously popular. In fact, that movie, I'd say, has come about equal to Revenge of the Nerds for a lot of people.
Really? Okay.
And then Risky Business, which was my first one, that's still pretty popular, too. So it's different. There are different things, you know. Some of the animated stuff is starting, I'm getting a lot of response from. After years of doing it, so it's nice, you know. Different people respond to different things, and it makes me feel very old.
it doesn't have to necessarily. You've compressed a lot of work into you know, only a couple of decades here. I mean, you've been very busy and very active over that period of time. I wanted to ask you a couple questions. We're always really fascinated on this show with process and how things come to be and the formation of different things here. You anticipated one of my next couple questions when you were talking about animation there. I'd be interested to know from you, as an actor having broken into that side of it, what all's involved. I have a friend some years ago who was living in California who was not an actor, who was not part of the business in a performance kind of away, who got approached to do some voiceover work, and he was really taken aback by how much training and everything like that he needed. I mean, he had the pipes, but he had to do so much work to be able to learn this. Is it something where when you're an actor, it's an easier transition than if you're a quote-unquote civilian, or is that a tremendous amount of work and learning for anybody to break into that business?
Well, it's probably a little easier if you're already an actor, but it definitely requires a certain specialized talent, I guess, you'd say. In the same way that I started in theater and then went to film and then went to television, and they're three, in some ways, very different types of work. And so while you start with, you know, an ability to do something in one area, there are things that you have to adjust to get into the other ones. And animation is the same. I mean, voiceover is the same. You know, you have to learn to control. And, you know, I'm doing three different animated series. One of them is American Dad, which has been on now for 6 years, I think. And then... a new one, which is a real joy to me, which is called Dan Versus, on the Hub new network, and then another one which isn't even on the air yet on Nickelodeon called Robot and Monster. So I'm doing three different ones at once, and it definitely requires a certain type of vocal work and control and all that sort of thing. But basically, I think it would be almost impossible to imagine somebody going in who's never had any acting experience and have to do that kind of thing. It would be very difficult to do, I would think.
Okay, well, that's a great answer.
It's got its own talent, yeah.
Sure, I mean, that's a great answer, Curtis, and it probably explains why my friend had to do as much work as he did. It's interesting to know that. And I guess it makes sense that if you're already in the acting business, that it may be more of a natural transition. Another process question that I had for you was, and this may sound a little bit naive, but for somebody who's worked as much as you had and done everything like that, the premise of the question, I wonder to what extent these days and over the years, the mountain comes to Muhammad, or how much you have to chase stuff. Is it a thing where, unless you're at the very top of the A-list, you're always having to chase things, or do your past connections, the people you've worked with, word on the street, to what extent do things find you as opposed to you having to find things?
I think it happens a lot more often that things come to me, but not as much as, again, you would think. I still have to audition for projects. You know, most people I know have to. It's part of what our job is. Mm-hmm. And it's become more and more difficult, really, for some reason. We could go into that forever. But I think that, it still is both. You know, I still have to audition for things. On the other hand, I'd say maybe five out of six of my last jobs, maybe three out of six of my last jobs have all been things where people have come to me. So it's both. But it isn't like after you've been in something for 30 years, suddenly everybody says, okay, now we're just going to give him jobs till he dies.
Sure.
It certainly never works out that way. You wind up having to, do really as much work as ever when it comes to getting some stuff. That doesn't change.
Well, that's about what I would have guessed your answer would have been. I was going to be interested to know if it came close to what I thought. I figured it might be kind of a mixture of the two, but that was just a completely blind guess.
Well, you
wind
up working with the same people. I mean, mm-hmm. This is the thing that if you're in the business long enough, you wind up working with writers and directors and producers and other actors, and that's where, a lot of these things come from. I mean, you were asking about the animation. My first animation job was a series which used to be on called Eek the Cat, which had been done by Savage Steve Holland, who was a guy I had worked with on Better Off Dead. So it went from 84 on Better Off Dead to Eek the Cat in the early 90s, and then I last worked with Savage, 2 years ago. So, those kinds of things are very helpful because you make friends, you establish a relationship, and you establish a reputation for what it's worth. And then people, start saying, oh, he'd be good for this. And so suddenly that happens.
Well, this is great stuff because I know these are the kind of things that I know the viewers are always interested in, some of the mechanics of how Hollywood works and how the gears kind of churn along here and keep these things.
Yeah, or don't.
These projects.
Unfortunately, it's not a science.
Mm-hmm.
It's there's a lot of uncertainty about it and things don't ever seem to exactly work out the way you expect them to, but that is the way it is.
That's true. And a process thing, but kind of as far as how you approach projects, I'm interested in this. As I was looking at your career, as I was going through and kind of researching, because you had, of course, your breakthrough roles in the early days, all of whom, to whatever degree, I think, had, some of the nebbishy type of effect to them, whether it be Booger, whether it be miles from risky business, whether it be, we already talked about Herb from Moonlighting. Is it a thing where sometimes when you play darker characters, I always think of Rodney Dangerfield. That's one of my favorite examples in Natural Born Thrillers, of where the audience is conditioned, you know, to think maybe in one way, and he comes apart completely different. There's never that kind of lightning effect that you're hoping to see from the guy, or not hoping to see, but thinking you might see from the guy. Do you approach every role as though it's sort of like tabula rasa, and as though the audience is unfamiliar with you from other roles, or is that there that sense in your head that this is going to be something that's really going to keep the audience maybe a little bit off balance if I take this in a direction that may not be as consistent with my past roles?
Well, I don't know that I have that much to do with it. I mean, I wish I did.
Mm-hmm.
But it really doesn't work out that way, at least for my kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
A good example, you mentioned Ray, the movie from 2005, I think, whatever it was, where I played Ahmet Erdogan, mm-hmm. who was the head of Atlantic Records. And, you know, this was so improbable because, and it was not planned, it was just an audition. Because the casting director of that movie was a woman who had cast me in my first film ever, in Risky Business. And I hadn't read for her since. And so after, 20 years or whatever it was, suddenly I'm in the room with her again and Taylor Hackford, and he asks me cold to read the role of Ahmet Erdogan. I'd come in for a different role. But no matter what I'd been cast in that movie, it would have been counter to anyone's conception of who I am or what I do. And as it was, physically, I didn't look anything like myself. I'd shaved my head. I didn't, I completely did not look like me. And in fact, many people saw that film and didn't even know I was in it. So, that was one of those cases where I was playing completely against type, but it didn't really do anything for me except for the fact that I had a wonderful experience in a great role in an Academy Award-winning movie. So that was a great thing. But I can't say that I had plotted anything about it. I didn't think, I wasn't thinking in terms of being a little more serious or mm-hmm. being comic relief or anything else. It was just approaching each role as it is.
Sure.
And, in films, you're also reliant upon what the director wants to do, and the director determines a lot of how you approach these things. So I wish I could say that it was all planned out in advance by us, but it really isn't.
Well, this is great stuff, Curtis. I go back a couple weeks on the show here. We had Dominic Chianese on. We were talking about how Uncle Junior came to be on The Sopranos. This is the kind of stuff we really love, learning about this and learning about the process. And I have to say, too, just in going down and looking at your resume, I mean, you've had so many brushes with so many of my favorite things out there, whether it be My Name is Earl or Dodgeball or Las Vegas, so many things you've been a part of that I've really enjoyed and been a fan of, either that particular movie or franchise, as the case may be. Do you have any type of things? I mean, in one sense, maybe it's a blur in your head because you've done so much, you've been in so many different roles, but is there any kind of a hierarchy in your head, some of your favorites, whether it be some of the more commercially big ones, whether it be like Booger or anything else, or maybe something you did in a play one time that maybe not that many people saw, but that you really enjoyed? Is there any type of hierarchy or top list in your head?
Well, I don't really think of it so much in those terms. It all sort of blends together as part of, a career. I don't really think of them in quite that way. But I would say off the top of my head that there were a number of plays that I've done which no one would be familiar with, so I'm hesitant to even mention them because it's not very interesting. But a lot of the plays that I did, I found very gratifying and fulfilling, and I really loved doing. But as far as movies or TV, I would say Herbert Viola was a great role in a great series. I would say Booger was great. I enjoyed playing that role, and it's totally the opposite of me. I think it's actually some pretty good work, and I'm not usually very happy with my work when I look at it. But I would have to say that Booger's pretty good. Ray, Ahmet Erdogan, I think, was a really nice dramatic turn, and I thought it turned out pretty well. That would be on the list. When I think about it, it's very hard to say, because there are so many things that, you know, are part of why I enjoy. You know, some movies are amazing experiences. I did this movie called Clan of the Cave Bear back in the 80s, which was just terrible. I mean, it was a horrible movie and very unpopular and a complete failure on pretty much every level. And yet it was one of the most amazing experiences that I've ever had. So, you know, on some level that is back there, but certainly not for the end result. There are all sorts of different things. But I would say, you know, Moonlighting, Revenge of the Nerds, Ray, those are three good sort of very different types of things that I could say I really enjoyed.
Well, you know, we love getting these insights from you, Curtis. And again, I've read in interviews where you've made that exact point about the amusement of playing Booger and sort of going against your own personal type to the extent, you know, in ways that people might not have even been able to surmise from watching that there. So I've read you make that point previously. I feel like we've only really been able to, hit the surface of things here with you, Curtis. There's so much more that we could talk about and would love to when we have some more time on the program here. But we always love to give our guests a chance to plug. According to IMDb here, you've got a number of things here that are going to be coming out, whether it be Beethoven's Christmas Adventure, Route 32, Halloween Dog, anything and everything else that you'd like to put out there, Curtis, please be our guest.
Well, there's a movie coming out this summer, I believe, this summer, called Flypaper, which is going to be in theaters this summer, which is a caper film, sort of bank robbery comedy action picture, and that'll be fun. That's a fun one. And then the ones that you mentioned, the Beethoven one, I think actually has changed the title, but I'm not sure. I think it's Beethoven Saves Christmas now. And that's the, you know, the old dog being taught new tricks. So that's with Robert Picardo, who's a wonderful actor from Star Trek Voyager, who's he and I are the bad guys in that. That's very, very fun comedy. That's another example of actually one where you have a lot of fun doing it. That's really the main one. And like I say, the animated ones, Dan Versus on the Hub and the upcoming one on Nickelodeon, Robot and Monster. Those are the things that are coming up this year.
Well, we'll definitely look forward to checking those out, Curtis. And I have to say, it's just been a real pleasure for us to have you on the program. And we'd love to have you back anytime, sir, to catch up with you some more and to hear some more about your career.
Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, sir. Curtis Armstrong, everyone. Great actor. We are very happy to be able to have him on the program here tonight. Voiceover artist as well, and a lot of great stories, as I knew there would be, from Curtis, and I want to thank the New York Bureau, of course, for setting that up.